Well, let's take a look at an ongoing trade battle with the European Union and specifically its impact on the dairy industry. Joining us now is Shauna Morris, Vice President, Trade Policy for the National Milk Producers Federation. Shauna, thanks for joining us. Kind of bring us up to date on this. I mean, there's a bigger dispute, but agriculture is kind of brought into it. And then more specifically, it kind of highlights what's been going on for some time, differences between the U.S. and EU on dairy issues. So kind of give us an overview.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you having me. And you're right, it has been going on for quite a while. There's a lot of different pieces to this. The latest news, of course, being that Europe just announced and implemented this week retaliatory tariffs against a range of different U.S. products being exported to Europe, including a few dairy lines. And that's in response to the U.S. losing a World Trade Organization case over aircraft subsidies that were being provided in the past to Boeing. The piece that happened even earlier, though, and for ag is really the much larger slice of this, is the fact that even before that, the EU lost a case in the World Trade Organization that the U.S. had brought over aircraft subsidies that the Europeans were giving to their sector in the Airbus case. And as part of that, there have been significant tariffs levied on a number of different European dairy products, particularly cheeses, that are sent over here. Both those tariff rates are 25%. I'd add, too, as you mentioned, this for us has really been very much tied into the EU's track record of non-compliance with its international obligations, not just on aircraft subsidies, but really more broadly on ag issues as well.
Yeah, so the reason I wanted to bring this up is because a lot of people might hear something about a dispute over the aircraft industry and not realize that agriculture in general, dairy in particular, being impacted by this. So it kind of shows how sometimes agriculture gets drawn into some of these things. But in the case with the European Union, you had an ongoing dispute with them over things like the names of some products, dairy products, cheese products that were we think of as common names, but they want to claim that are theirs and that they have control over them.
You're absolutely right. We've been really vocal advocates on the EU's use of geographical indications to try to effectively monopolize the use of generic cheese names like Parmesan, Asiago, Feta, and others, not just in the EU market, but in a number of other global markets. Kind of adding insult to injury is the fact that they're able to export all those products here to our market just fine, but we can't ship any of them over to Europe, and that's one of the drivers of the big lopsided nature of our transatlantic dairy trade. That's a big part of the reason why National Milk advocated successfully and quite strongly to USTR when the U.S. was crafting its retaliation list when it won a WTO case earlier to specifically target those products to try to help put a spotlight on the inequities that we're dealing with here and use it as a chance to pressure Europe to make reforms in those areas too at the same time that they levied pressure on Europe to come into compliance with its aircraft requirements.
Yeah, that's another one. People might hear geographical indications or indicators and think, well, what's that got to do with dairy? Well, when they hear that term, they ought to realize we're talking about the being able to use the names of some of these products that we're used to and who has control or who has, who has say over how they are used. So that's a big issue.
It absolutely is. GIs or geographical indications are really pretty similar to trademarks. And of course, that's pretty familiar here in the U.S. terminology. Except that geographical indications are given to one group of producers in a certain area rather than to just one company. What's made them such a flashpoint and a hot-button trade policy issue has been the fact that the EU's intentionally tried to use a number of its geographical indications specifically to try to block competition from the U.S., banning our products from being sold in Europe if they're accurately labeled, and trying to use EU free trade agreements with a number of other countries around the world to try to put the same restrictions in those foreign third country markets as well. And that's a big issue that we were able to work successfully with a number of members of Congress to urge a more robust U.S. response to this year. We'll be continuing to keep up that pressure looking forward to 2021 as well.
Yeah, so watch for that. Geographical indications. When you see that in the news, take note. We're talking with Shauna Morris, Vice President, Trade Policy for the National Milk Producers Federation. Shauna, you talked about working with the U.S. Trade Representative's office. Looks like there could be, will probably be some changes there with a new administration. Do you anticipate any differences in approach in trade issues, like with the European Union, with a new administration coming in?
It's obviously hard to tell exactly what the new landscape's going to look like, particularly without knowing who the new nominee may be under a Biden administration. But I think we're certainly likely to see a shift in tone and kind of approach, and perhaps the prevalence of using tariff levers to try to enact changes on the trade front. I'll note that the tariffs we've been talking about so far, though, on our call are ones that have been explicitly blessed by the World Trade Organization. So they're entirely legal and absolutely fine to be being imposed until the EU shapes up and complies. What we certainly hope will stay the same, though, and in fact increase, is a really key focus on enforcement and holding our trading partners to account. I think that's something that has broad bipartisan support and is really fundamental to ensuring that there's faith in follow-through, that we negotiate a deal, and that the other side is expected to hold up their end of the bargain. That's important, certainly with the EU, where they have a strong track record of not doing that, but with a number of others as well. USMCA in Canada, for instance, we think is likely to be continue to be a front-setter compliance problem heading into next year that we'll be looking to work with USTR on in 2020 as well.
Well, this is also a reminder, anytime there's talk about getting a trade deal done with the European Union, there's a lot to overcome, a lot of differences to work through. This would be one of them. While we have you, Shauna, I guess any conversation about trade always has to seemingly include China. How much dairy product are we now sending to China?
I don't have a specific number on last month exports top of mind, but I know that we have been climbing this year and seen some recovery in our exports, particularly once the U.S.-China Phase One agreement was put in place earlier this year, and as there's been some tariff relief provided. What we do continue to hear from a lot of our members, though, unfortunately, is that there's not enough in terms of the retaliatory tariff relief, that we really need to see that being enacted on a wider basis for a broader subset of products in a way that's longer term, so that companies can really count on not having to pay those retaliatory rates if they enter into contracts with Chinese partners. We think that that's going to be really key to significantly driving an uptick in our market share in that critical market.
And one other note, a while back we were talking about the need to have enforcement of USMCA, especially when it comes to Canada and dairy policy. What's the latest there? What's happening?
Yeah, that continues to be a thorny button with two key issues front of mind for us when we're talking about compliance with USMCA from the Canadians. And one of those has been an issue from the very start of implementation a few months ago in July, and that's how Canada's actually divvying out the tariff rate quotas that provide the market access for our exports under USMCA. We have a certain allotment that we can ship under USMCA without tariffs being imposed, but the Canadians have given the right to be able to import those products to Canadian processors of those same products in the vast majority of cases. And that sets up a really harmful dynamic, we're concerned, that leads it to cases that are much less likely to be able to be making full benefit of the access we got under USMCA. Of course, the other key point that we have our eye on is compliance with the Class 7 related dairy pricing policy changes that Canada committed to do under the agreement. They've made some changes on the policy side to date. We're still looking for greater transparency into some of the reforms that have been made and those that still remain to be made. Canada has a few more months until the rest of its commitments in that space come due by the end of the year. And so that's an area we'll be continuing to watch and continuing to engage with our government on to make sure that we actually see the full benefit of the bargain that was negotiated.
Yep, we'll keep a close eye on it. Shauna, thank you very much for the update.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mike.
That's Shauna Morris, Vice President, Trade Policy for the National Milk Producers Federation. Stay with us. You're listening to AOA.